There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition, the 10th edition of the Member Guest Podcast. Just real quick, it feels a little crazy that we're on episode 10, boys.
I know. It does.
Double digits is a big milestone.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Claps all around. Yeah. golf claps. Speaking of milestones, so today, what we are discussing is a very, difficult but good conversation, to have. Andy, who is part of the Member Guest Podcast, is going to open up a little bit about his journey with golf and addiction. And I think we've kind of, you know, lightheartedly talked about it in previous episodes, and you're very open about it. But it was the 13th. Anniversary,
yeah,
of being sober. So more golf claps, Brandy. So I think, you know, it's going to be just an awesome conversation, especially the world that we live in today. Social media, everybody's lives are really out there in public. A lot of, you know, people today deal with mental health issues, and it's just, it's, you know, we want to use our platform to be able to talk about things like this, even though we may only have a small following for now. It's important for not only us, but our listeners, people who know us. So why don't I just open it up to you, start to talk about kind of your journey. I know you really want to, you know, talk about how golf has helped you and how it may help others that are listening to this specific podcast, including Tony, Johnny, and myself.
Yeah. No, I think really, really well said as to the intent of the podcast. Yeah, I'm always, like, I guess, willing to talk about my story or things that have happened to me or experiences that I've had, really with the intent of knowing that those parts of my story, you know, can maybe potentially help other people, that are dealing with things. So, you know, I guess maybe let me start off just by saying that, you know, this isn't a podcast about how cool I am, or anything like that, you know, just more so about my story and my experience and how maybe there's people out there that can relate with it. And actually, like, you know, one of the ways that I think about my recovery is that my recovery from addiction has been really having an addiction has really been probably the best thing that's ever happened to me, because it's, you know, been the thing that's enabled me to help the most amount of people, you know what I mean? So, in many ways, like the worst things that have happened to me in my life turned into like the best things that it could have happened to me in my life, you know? So in that sense, like, you know, I'm super grateful for having had the experiences that I've had, because it's given me a real sense of purpose and an ability to reach people that I like otherwise never would have had, you know? So, moral of the story is to just say that, like, this isn't a sob story as much as it is just, while these things that, you know, transpired or, you know, these things that I've struggled with, you know, are largely negative, just understand that, like, these are, I wouldn't change any of these things if I could, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes sense. And you've always talked about how golf has helped you in your journey. I mean, like, I didn't know. You know, when we first talked, and it was like one of our first episodes, I think. It's like, yeah, does everybody want to drink? And you're like, oh, I don't drink. And I thought you were joking. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know, and I had known you for a couple months.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I'm actually sober. I was like, oh, I didn't know that. And you're like, yeah, I guess I'd never really, you know, talk about it. And then you kind of opened up about it. And it, you know.
I just to add on to that, I just want to commend you on your ability to, you know, recognize all the amazing things that you've been able to accomplish and all the amazing people that you've been able to help. And I hope that everybody who's listening just takes it as an opportunity for you to realize that there are other options out there, and that life can get better. And your story is one of an amazing accomplishment, and kudos to you for helping as many people as you have. And we hope that we're able to share some of your stories with them.
Yeah. And even if not that, like, I do think because I've been through addiction, I have a different perspective on golf that maybe people that might find interesting or like, you know, take something out of. Golf is a very like spiritual game to me. And a lot of that has to do with my addiction. So anyway, I think maybe let's get into it. And so I kind of, you know, typically like to start early in the story.
How early?
Well, I always say like I think my addiction was there when I was like a little kid, you know.
We talking like before you could talk or kindergarten?
I mean, I do think there's probably, you know, there's a genetic component for sure. But I can remember like really early on in life, like when I was really young, just kind of having this feeling like, I guess the best way to describe it would be like, I always felt like everybody else had kind of gotten the memo or like the book on like what they were supposed to be doing and like how they're supposed to be living life. And like, they messed up my mailing address or something. And like, I didn't have it. You know what I mean?
Like your development was delayed by like 2 years or something.
Like, I just always felt different. Like, I just always felt like, even from the youngest age, I always felt like out of place or like I didn't, not necessarily I didn't fit in, but just more so like I didn't really have any idea what was going on or like how to function. And so, you know, I always had that kind of feeling, that emotional feeling of just feeling different or separate or not a part of, from a like really early age. But I think the kind of contradiction in my story was like, I was always popular. I was always a good athlete. I was always a good student. You know,
yeah, because you played sports and stuff,
100%,
right?
100%. Like
baseball and
100%.
Other. So you're really good at baseball. But.
All of my, like, you know, external world would say, like, here's this young kid who's, like, popular and, you know, he's a good athlete and he's, you know, all these things. But, like, there was always this big disconnect between, like, how I felt about myself and how I felt and, like, how the world perceived me.
Why do you think that is? Do you have opinions on that now after 13 years of soberness? Because, like, you hear that a lot. It's always the, you know, I'm not just singling out athletes, but since I pay attention to the sports world, I hear it a lot from athletes, or even most recently was Ellen DeGeneres's assistant, I believe. And then I think about the Linkin Park singer, if I'm remembering some over the past year. Yeah. Why do you think that is? The people that are popular and seem like they have it all.
Yeah,
together.
I don't know. I don't really know why it is. I think it's like kind of there's a spiritual malady. There's like a sickness. There's a component of an emotional condition that happens where you just begin to feel isolated and different than and a part of and not connected to other people. And, you know, for me, like I was the youngest of five boys. I grew up in a very piecemealed family. You know, my parents were married and I was their only child, and they both my parents brought in children to their marriage. So I have four older brothers that were all half brothers. But for me, like being born into that environment, everybody in that house was like my full brother. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you didn't know the difference when you were born.
No,
brothers.
No. And everybody in my household was like successful. You know, my dad was a successful guy. He was a, you know, really good athlete himself. He was drafted by the Kansas City Royals. He was, you know, played baseball at the University of Virginia. And I had another brother that played baseball at the University of Virginia, another brother that played baseball in college for a top 10 team in the country. I had another brother that went to the Citadel Military College in South, you know, so it was a very like
high expectations.
Like everybody's successful, kind of a, like a little bit of a, like a suck it up household. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't say that as like a knock, but just like, that was my conditioning as a young age. It's like work harder, try harder. You know, figure it out, like kind of just, you know.
I would say generally speaking, I think a lot of people are age kind of grew up that way.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, that's kind of how I grew up too. And I know a lot of more like millennials or people in their 30s, 40s, again, just generally speaking, I think grew up with that kind of mentality.
You know, knowing you now, you have a big aspect of your personality that's very comedic.
Yeah.
Did you always have that, or did you develop that after post-addiction or pre-addiction?
My household was always funny. You know, my brothers are funny. My mom's really funny. So humor was always like a big part of my life growing up. And humor became sort of a coping mechanism.
Like a crutch, basically.
For sure. Yeah. I think for me, at a certain point. But I mean, to kind of fast forward through the story, you know, like what happened to me was, I think I had these kind of conditions that were like, you know, ripe for, like, I guess the best way to describe it is like, you know, the wind was blowing 50 miles an hour out of the north. The greens were fast and firm. Like, the conditions were like ripe, you know what I mean? And, some stuff happened that I think led me to my addiction. Like, I don't, you know, it's hard to say, is it like chicken or egg, or like, you know, whether I was like born this way, or whether if those things hadn't happened, what I had become, I don't really know. But I know, like, for me, the big event that transpired that, you know, kind of led me down the path was when I was 14, my brother, who was like kind of my hero growing up. So I talked about my other brothers, but I had another brother who was like the anti-hero, you know what I mean? Like, in the house, right? He was like always arguing with everyone. Like, he's always getting into fights. He was like, you know, tough as nails. He would like, didn't go to class. Like, girls loved him. You know what I mean? Like, he was just like an action figure to me. He was literally like my hero, 'cause he was just the anti-hero of like all the expectations that I had, you know. Me, I'm going to be this great athlete. You know, I was the best, you know, like at a young age, I was like the best at sports of any of my brothers. And so like, there was just a lot of like expectation. And then I had my brother Alex, and he was just like, he just didn't care about anything, you know? And, so I always gravitated towards him the most. and I always like looked up to him, and we had this like really close relationship. And I always tell people, like, my brother Alex was the, you know, if I had one phone call left, like, he's the phone call that I would, you know, make, you know what I mean? So to make a kind of a long story short, my brother had been in the Marine Corps. You know, he like became this badass Marine, and, you know, he just was this, you know, he just was this guy that, you know, just that I just revered in so many ways. We used to like, you know, we used to get in his car and like drive fast, and like, you know, he just would always like, he was one of those guys, like, he just like, if you looked at him the wrong way, like, he just would, you know, he wouldn't put up with it. You know what I mean? Like, he was just afraid of absolutely nothing. He was totally and completely fearless. And you know, to make a, again, what ended up happening to my brother was, when I was 14, basically I was in a baseball tournament in Florida, and, my dad, you know, woke me up in the middle of the night, and he told me that my brother died. And, you know, I obviously, like, that was a pretty like intense thing to hear. And I, what ended up happening was, I found out pretty shortly after that he had committed suicide. And, you know, it was just an extremely like shocking thing that happened, you know, very like unexpected. You know, I knew that he, had some kind of mental health issues, but it was just hard, you know, being that age, being that impressionable, and having, you know, somebody who you really feel like is like kind of your, you know, the person you look up to, you know. Mm-hmm. He's like the person I most wanted to make proud of me, you know. I remember like and Tony, you'll relate with this, but I remember like the first game, you know, when you start playing football and like you don't really know how to tackle or hit.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and you know the game where the game or the practice where it clicks and you figure out like how to hit somebody, like use your pads and like get low and pop somebody. I remember the first game I figured that out. My brother was at the game, and you know, he was in his like Marine uniform on the sideline, you know, and I remember looking over at my brother and just being like, man, I better go like hit somebody, because he's going to have my ass if I don't go hit somebody, you know. And I figured it out, and I hit this kid. And my brother after the game, he said, Andy, I'm really proud of you, you know. And I'll never forget that. I mean, it made, he had that much of a, like an impact on me.
It's amazing how somebody's words, especially somebody that you look up to that much, can have an impact on you.
Yeah, and he was a good dude, man. He's a really loyal friend. His buddies loved him. There's just so many. I mean, I could spend a whole podcast talking about my brother and what an awesome dude he was. But he lost his life. He committed suicide. And that kind of like event was really the straw that broke the camel's back. You know what I mean? Like, for me, I just felt so much pain, as it related to like what happened to my brother. And like, I had all this other stuff going on, and it just was like, you know, really hard to kind of manage just the way that I felt, you know. I just felt so angry and so full of fear and sadness. And it really like wasn't long after that that, it's funny because like, if I look back at my life, you know, I don't remember like, I remember like a couple plays, you know, from high school football. Mm-hmm. Like I remember a couple of at bats, you know what I mean? Yeah. In baseball, I could tell you like where I was, who I was with, you know, I could tell you like what the weather was. I could tell you what everybody was wearing, the first night that I drank alcohol. And it's because like that night had such a big impact on me, in terms of when I put it in my system, it was the first time like really in my life that I felt normal. You know what I mean? Like I felt like I wasn't afraid to talk to anybody. I felt like I belonged. I felt like I fit in. I forgot about what happened to my brother. And for me, it was like, you know, people always talk about drugs and alcohol as the problem. The irony, I think, in my experience and story is that drugs and alcohol were the answer for me, man.
Yeah.
Like it was all I had, and it was how I felt normal. It was how I felt like a person, you know? And so look, I mean, you know, like, you know, I think the great tragedy of sort of how we educate people is like, I didn't smoke crack that night. And you know what I mean? Like, like I didn't even get in trouble. You know what I mean? Like I went home, I went to bed, I woke up the next morning and I remember thinking like, man, I want to do that again. You know, I want to feel that way again. And you know, it's not like in my story, like, you know, that next night I went out and I got loaded or I got drunk. Like, look, I played college baseball for a year. You know what I mean? Like I'd accomplished a lot of things, and I had many years drinking and then eventually doing drugs that were good, that weren't bad. But what ends up happening is like, when you go down that route and you start to find the wrong medicine, you know what I mean? Eventually the medicine stops working. And that's what happened for me. And so, you know, the disease of addiction is a progressive illness. You know, it just gets worse with time. And so what started as a once a week thing turned into like, you know, twice a week. And then what started as a twice a week thing turned into three times a week. Right. And then four times a week. And then what started as just alcohol turned into, you know, smoking weed. And then what started as smoking weed turned into doing cocaine. And then what was doing cocaine turned into doing Oxycontin and prescription drugs. And, you know, the next thing I know, basically like, you know, in a whirlwind of activity and all sorts of things, right? Like I am 20 years old. I don't have anywhere to live. I've failed out of college. I lost baseball. I'd alienated, you know, every relationship that I had with everybody in my life, including my family. I had no friends. And all I did every day was wake up and try to figure out how to get loaded.
Were you at college?
I had dropped out of school. I, you know, had mustered together a semester of like playing baseball, and I got hurt. And so,
That's a common thing, right?
Yeah.
That where people find addiction is, you know, especially in sports, they get injured, mm-hmm. and then they get prescribed, you know, painkillers, for example. Mm-hmm. Do you think, did something like that happen to you, and did that accelerate it, or was it just another circumstance that occurred, or did that not happen to you? Or
yeah, I think like the structure of having sports in school, structurally was like a thing that kind of kept me from falling off the deep end. And then when I got hurt, I just didn't have that structure. And, you know, I remember like, yeah. I just basically just was like, look, if I can't play baseball, like, I'm not going to go to class. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, what's the point of that? Like, I don't care, yeah. You know? And so, yeah. And then of course, like, the painkillers and that route. Yeah. And that's really kind of where that started. And that's ultimately what got, you know, pretty unmanageable, for me. It was just like, you know, at my peak, I mean, I had I was doing a couple hundred dollars worth of drugs a day, you know what I mean? Like, to function. And look, I mean, the story of my addiction is as much about, I would say just like the mental health aspects of it. You know, it's not a particularly like, and part of the reason I was joking earlier is like, it's not a particularly like cool story. You know what I mean? Like, there are glory stories and things that, you know, are sort of like, dramatic, right? Like, I mean, I crashed a bunch of cars, right? Like, I mean, I ran from the police a lot. Like, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stories, right? But like at the end of the day, like for me, my addiction was as much about the mental health aspects, the depression, the anxiety, the debilitating anxiety, of just like being so terrified to just walk down the street because I was so scared of like who I would see, you know? And it's not a particularly like grandiose disease, man. Like at the end of the day, like I was just a utterly terrified, like little kid. And the only way I knew how to live was, to put drugs and alcohol in my system so that I could feel normal. And what happens is like the window of feeling normal when you start down that road is really big, right? Like I can have a couple beers and feel good. You know what I mean? And the more you do, the smaller that window gets, you know? And then it's like, a couple beers aren't doing it for me, man. Like I got to drink a gallon of Jim Beam, you know? And I got to that point in my addiction and it's like, man, that's not doing it for me anymore. Like I got to start. And then what happens is eventually like that window just gets so small where you can feel okay. That you just get exhausted, man. It's just so tiring and you get so sick. You know, we talk about, you get sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, you know? And I got to that place, and a huge part of my story is just like the depression and the fear and the anxiety. And just at the end of the day, like for me, you know, I woke up every day and I don't really know how else to say it. Like I just fucking hated myself, man. Like I hated what was looking back at me in the mirror. And part of the conditioning of the way that I grew up was like, all I wanted to do was fix it. You know, it's not like, and this is what people don't understand about people with addiction. Like, it's not like when I was a little kid, I was like, you know, and everybody was like, little Tommy's like, man, I want to be a firefighter. And I'm like, oh man, I want to be a drug addict. You know what I mean? Like I never like wanted that to be my life. Like, you know, it just, the disease took over me and I was totally powerless over it, man. And I had every intention every day of like making my life better. You know, there's nothing I wanted more than to be a functioning, happy human being. I just had no idea how to do it. I had no idea what I was supposed to do. And every effort that I made to fix myself just seemed to make the problem worse. You know, it's like, man, it's like quicksand. You know, it's like, you know, for me, that was like, man, I'm only going to drink beer instead of liquor, you know, or I'm going to stop doing hard drugs, or I'm going to go to the gym tomorrow and work out, or, you know, I'm going to tell my mom I'm sorry for being an asshole, you know, or like, I just tried all these things over and over and over again. And I just kept digging myself into a deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper hole, you know, up until the point where I got to this place in my life where really, I mean, honestly, like, I just wanted to die, man. Like I just didn't want to live anymore. And I didn't have any like motivation to wake up. You know, I remember driving down the road like many times and just hitting the gas and just thinking like, you know, man, like if I wreck, I wreck. Like I don't really give a shit, you know? I mean, ultimately that's like what the disease did to me, is it just what started out as this thing that provided me with medicine and relief from the thing that I struggled with inside, kind of it turned on me, you know, where, I got so far down the scale that I was at this place in my life where, I thought every day about killing myself. I thought every day about taking my life. And there were times you know, on two instances where I tried to do that, unsuccessfully. It's like, I joke about it, but like, I was so messed up. I couldn't even kill myself. You know what I mean? Like, that's true. Like, and so, yeah, man, like I know we're kind of getting dark here, but, and that's not the intent of this, but I think the point of saying all that is to just say, like, I know what struggle is, you know what I mean? Like, I know what it's like to wake up every day in the morning and to want to change and to not know how to change. And I know what it's like to just not have any control over yourself. And I know what it's like to feel, a lot of pain, you know? Pain is really all I knew for years in my life. I mean, the darkness that I felt and experienced on a daily basis, you know, I'll never forget. And it's hard looking back now as somebody who like has seen the light, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a happy guy.
I was just going to stop. I didn't know how to stop you.
Yeah.
Right there. But I just need, as your friend, like, I love you.
Yeah.
A lot of people love you, man.
Yeah.
Because you're just one of the best dudes I know.
Yeah.
And so kudos to you for the struggles that you went through. And the ability to find your way out of that, because it's something that not a lot of people have significant problems doing that. And you know, as Andy put it, the basis of this episode is not darkness.
Mm-hmm.
It's talking about challenges that everybody has in their lives and how people are able to overcome them and the ways that we overcome these challenges can be accomplished in many different ways. And I just want to reiterate, like, I'm really like proud to call you my friend.
Thanks, dude.
And like what you've accomplished is truly impressive. So.
I appreciate that, man. Well, I mean, like I said, you know, I guess the best way to just sum it all up is to just say, like, you know, if I was a computer, it's like I had a virus, man. You know what I mean? And like, my operating system was all messed up. Like, I didn't have a good operating system. My operating system was like, you know, wake up, get as messed up as I could. The way I knew to deal with people was like, you know, I was the kind of dude that like, I'd steal your wallet and help you look for it. You know what I mean? I didn't know how to function as a human being. You know, all I knew was like stealing, lying, being self-centered, getting mine, living in fear, violence, you know, conflict, anger, my temper, you know. So I had no tools. I had no ability to function. And I hit this fork in the road, man, where it was like, look, you know what I mean? Like either I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to be dead. I'm going to be in jail. Or I got to do something different. And this is, no one ever understands this when I explain it, but what happened for me was I just had an experience and I had a moment in time where I just had a clear thought come to me. And the clear thought that came to me was that I couldn't fix myself. And I know that might not make a lot of sense, but I'd spent a lot of energy and a lot of time trying to fix myself. And the next thought that came to me was, if you can't fix yourself, maybe somebody else can. You know what I mean? And that was it. That was like the door that opened. It was like the crack in the window, you know? It was like the arrow, the quiver, you know what I mean? Like it created this crack. And through that crack, I started to let go. You know what I mean? And I'll never forget, like, my dad, I love you, man. Like, you saved my life. You know, he sat down with me and he was like, Andy, like, here's the deal, dude. He's like, you got two choices. You're going to go to treatment and I know you need treatment and we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to negotiate on it. He's like, or, you know, you're out of our life, man. Like, you're out of our life. Don't come home ever again. You know what I mean? Until you get help. And, you know, he said it's the hardest thing he's ever done in his life, you know, cause he thought I was going to die. And I remember my first reaction was like, well, I don't need you. You know what I mean? Like, you know, but then I had this experience where it was like, look, man, like I got to do something, and maybe this thing can help me. Maybe this is it. And so I went to treatment January 7th, 2010. Got on a plane. I went and bought a jacket. I was like, my one condition is I need a jacket, you know, because I'm going to Minnesota. And, like, I was like, I thought Minnesota was like igloos and Eskimos, you know what I mean? Like, I grew up in D.C. Like, I didn't know what this place was. And I get off the plane, man, and, like, there's a dude standing there with a sign that says Andy T., you know what I mean? And, like, I'm just scared shitless, you know? It's all I can do to just, like, take a step, you know? I'm so scared, man. Like, because, again, like, you know, when you're in that spot, it's, like, all I knew was drinking and drugging. Like, that was it. That was all I knew, man. I was a master expert. Like, I was a plus five drinker, you know what I mean? Like, I was a plus five drug addict,
drinking,
you know?
Drinking at a handicap, you were...
Yeah, man. Like, I was amazing. I was almost pro. I was so good at being a drug addict, like... But it was all I knew, and I was so scared because I was like, man, like, what am I going to do if I don't have this, you know? And this dude, like, he threw me in the back of a van, and he drove me to this place, and I got out, and, you know, the next day I woke up in a bed in this detox unit, and this dude was standing in the hallway, and he said, hey, man, he said, I'm Tommy. I'm going to be your big buddy here, you know? And, like, the big buddy was, like, this dude that got there, like, a week before me, you know what I mean? So he was just another degenerate that, like, knew a little bit more, you know, about the system, you know? And anyway, this kid ended up being my best friend. He's in my wedding, which is amazing. His name's Tommy Chester. He's an awesome dude. And I went through this process, man, and it was, like, you know, it was just kind of one day at a time. But I started to go through this experience, basically, where, like, I started to get tools, you know? I started to... sit down with people, and for the first time in my life, I started to feel like I wasn't alone, you know, and there were other people that, I could relate with, and maybe they didn't look like me. Maybe they didn't, you know, go to a school like I did. Maybe they didn't play sports like I did, but it's like, we had this thing that connected us, you know, on this really deep level. And that, just that experience in and of itself was, like, transformative for me, because for the first time in my life, I started to feel, like, really, truly connected with other people. And I went through, you know, treatment for a long time. You know, it was like learning to ride a bike, you know, every day. Like, we did group therapy, and I did individual counseling. And, man, like, you know, the work I did in that process was, like, you know, writing down all the things I'd done that had hurt people, and sharing all those things with another person. Like, man, that was hard, you know, talking about everything I was afraid of. That was hard, you know, talking about all the ways in which, I had, you know, like I said, harmed other people. And what happened is, like, I went from there and I did another 5 months in treatment at this place. And what happened is I just started to kind of figure out, like, all right, like, I have a new way of living, you know, a new operating system. And that operating system was, like, love and service, you know. And it was like, how do I spend today doing something for somebody else, you know. And that work around being of service and while working on my own, like, inner demons, you know, my own fears and insecurities, it started to transform me, man. Like, it just started to change me. And I, like, I always, I tell people, like, you know, it's not like, have you guys ever heard of the story of the Statue of David by Michelangelo?
No.
Okay. Well,
maybe
this quote or whatever. And I don't even know if this is true. It's something that people say. So don't Google it.
We're, like, a podcast and it's on the internet. It's going to absolutely be true.
But, like, so it says, like, you know, they're like, David, like, or Michelangelo, like, man, like, this is the most beautiful statue, you know, of David, you know, like, how did you make the statue? And he's like, I didn't make the statue. You know, I just chipped away all the things that didn't look like David. And there he was, you know, and that was, that was my experience. Like, for me, like, it was confronting all the things that weren't me, to find out, like, who I was, you know. And, and I just emerged, like, out of this process, like, and, you know, I was a transformed person. And, yeah, like, I had the same personality, and, you know, if you ran into me or whatever, and you knew me growing up, like, I'm the same dude. But I figured out, or I learned, and I acquired an ability to, I guess, just to, like, function in society, you know. And, And so kind of getting to the part of the podcast I think we all want to talk about, which is like the game of golf. Golf, I started playing golf like a couple years into my recovery. And all the things that I, you know, learned in recovery became like tenets of golf. You know what I mean? Like
patience
is a huge thing, right? Like we talk in recovery about like taking it one day at a time, you know, and not like not worrying about the future and not worrying about not thinking about the past, you know? And so if you're on the golf course, like for me, like it's a meditation or a practice of like, you know, I mean, you guys can probably relate to this, but if you're on five thinking about the shot you hit on three, like you're pretty much fucked. You know what I mean?
100%. Yeah. Like,
and so 100%. Like, that was true for me, like in life, you know, man, like I got so tripped up about the past and, you know, learning how to live in the moment was transformative for me. Another thing was like, letting go, man, like just letting go of your need to control, you know, in golf, like you don't know what shot's coming out, man. Like all you can do is like make a good swing. You know what I mean? But like,
yeah,
you at the end of the day, like you can't control which one comes out, you know? And like, that's the same thing for me with life and with my recovery, man, is like, I had to learn to just let go of the outcome and let go of feeling like I needed to be in control all the time of everything. And so it's an active practice for me with that.
All the friendships too. You talk about when you're in recovery and you had to sit, you know, you finally felt like you belonged with the people that you're with. Yeah. Like the two clubs that I've joined at, like you're there and you start to realize how much in common you have with the people around you, right? Like it's not just the golf, but it's the personalities, right? It's the kind of common underlying things that like all four of us have, right? You have that competitive nature, but you're also like learning about each other and you have all these things that are just like, oh, this person's a lot like me. It doesn't matter if they're 60, 65 years old, where they come from. Like we're all here for the same reasons and, you know, playing golf for a lot of the same reasons, I mean, and it brings you together.
You're talking a lot about those tools,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you're just adding to your toolbox.
Yep.
Ways to help yourself in your personal life.
Yep.
But, you know, also, you know, all those things that you've learned in your personal life and the challenges that you've made it through, like puts a lot of stuff on the golf course into perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You don't know if you're going to snap one off the planet or you're going to hit a high cutty one into the shit, but life goes on and you know, those experiences are ones that, you know, been able to develop and
mm-hmm.
and this your story is an incredible one, man. Seriously, I don't even like we're just literally just scratching the surface of mm-hmm. some of the things that you've talked to us about and sharing this story is one that, you know, I can't imagine how difficult your story is to tell, but maybe it just adds one little toolbox or a little crack of an opportunity for somebody out there listening here to engage and understand that there is a better life out there. And so, kudos to you for sharing part of your story, man.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, like I said, I think, with golf, like, there's so much to the game that is like spiritual in nature, for me, you know, and even like Jordan, you were talking about like the fellowship thing, like that's huge, man. Like, the relationships that I have with people, like the friendships, the deep connection that I have with people. I mean, there's no other game in the world you can spend like 4 hours with another person, you know, and like that's pretty cool.
And you get to really know who that person is.
Yeah. You know, if you want to be happier on a golf course, like go help somebody find their ball. You know what I mean? Like, be about other people's game, you know, not about your game. And that's something I've learned in my recovery, man. It's like, you know, the best way for me to stay sober today is to help somebody else. You know, it's like we talk about, we only keep what we have by giving it away. And I think like that's a parallel to golf too, man. Like, it's like, you know, if you're worried about your game, like help somebody with their game, you know, it's the best way your game's going to get better.
Dude, I'm laughing or I'm smiling because last Monday, like we were going to do a podcast, last Monday, we recorded on Mondays and ended up just being Andy and I, bad weather, schedule stuff didn't work out. So it was just Andy and I in here. Yeah. And I think you're smiling because you know what I'm about to say too. We're sitting in here just hitting balls, working on our game, and something clicked with Andy, like in his move, like something clicked. And then he was like, do I look not square enough to do something? I'm just sitting there from the back, like I'm taking videos, and I'm like, move your back foot more towards the wall. Like, he knew exactly what I was saying. He moved it, and I swear he just striped, like, dude, 10 just nut drives right down the pipe. Yeah. Highest ball speed he had. Just like, I was happy. He was happy. We were just like two dudes in my garage, like giving each other high fives, just like so pumped about
the best, man. The it other made person's you feel game. Good.
It yeah, made it made feel me good. Feel good. Yeah, it was just
Tony. Like, we've had that experience.
Just awesome.
I got a lot of videos of Andy swing on my phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is. It's just a great feeling. I mean, like, I do that with friends all the time, and it's just, it's rewarding.
The other one I see is like, and man, this was like, boy, was this like maybe the hardest part of my recovery is like, the hardest part of the process was just like being honest with myself, man. You know what I mean? Like, and in golf, you know, you're not fooling anybody but you with your assessment of your game. You know what I mean? Like, we talk about like taking inventory, like you got to take inventory of your game and know, like, this is what I'm good at. This is what I'm not good at, you know, and really be objective about that. Like, you know, I did it with myself as a human. Like, we talk about, it's an objective process. Like, you're taking inventory of yourself, and you've got to be honest with yourself. And man, I think that's one thing I see a lot of people out there that play golf that are not honest with themselves about, like, what they are in their game or whatever.
Mulligans, taking gimmies. Yeah.
Or even just like, my driver's my best club, and like they hit the driver off the map, or like, you know, whatever, like whatever it is that, you know, is just like that not being honest about your own assessment of yourself. And look, in recovery, I think the best way to do that is like, go talk to somebody else, man. Like, you know, like, hey, what do you think of my game? Like, you know, cause other people aren't going to lie to you, you know?
Yeah, it's very true. I think, well, you talk about that too. Like, for me, probably, I don't know, 3 years ago is when kind of the switch kind of clicked. My buddy Zach, who is a good golfer, he sticks probably like a one, you know, very similar skill levels to us. And we would go out and play. And he's like, dude, you gotta like put out those two footers. So, like, you gotta start doing that. Like, you really want to get from like that four or five down to one, two. Like, you need to start. You start putting those out. Like, I'm not going to give those to you anymore, type of thing. It's just like these small little things. And I think you talked about on one of our first, God, I can't remember. It might have been with Jamie. I can't remember one of the episodes. And you said, you can tell a lot about a person, like in an interview process, or like take them out golfing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you'll see like what type of person they are in terms of, you know, how they keep score, how they play, you know, their patience or lack thereof, you know, when they're hitting good shots, bad shots, how they treat you, just how they treat the course.
Yeah.
A lot of things that you can learn about somebody playing golf, and it really teaches you to slow down. And see you, Johnny. Our producer, Johnny's leaving us.
I'll tell one more story. Just like when I, in the recovery process, like, we did this thing called like making amends. Right. And like, so, and you know, you keep doing it. You know, it's really important. It's really important in the new operating system to like have a clean conscience. You don't want to have anything you're going to drink over, you know what I mean? And so, you got to have like that. You got to like run the McAfee software, like, you know, once a month or whatever, and just make sure everything's cool. But when you do it the first time, like, it's pretty crazy. And I had made this list of like everybody that I'd harmed. Right. So if you can imagine, like, going back through your whole life and making a list of everybody you've harmed, especially when you're like me, when you were just like a, I mean, I don't really know how else to put it, but like, I was just like an unhinged, like, savage animal, you know, like, I was just a tornado ripping through the lives of everybody around me. And so you go back and you make all those amends to people. I flew to Washington, D.C. I found a place with two coffee shops. I scheduled people in 1 hour increments. I called everybody that I'd harmed. Boom, boom, walking back and forth, right? And, like, man, that shit sucks. Like, it sucks. Like, it's so hard to just, like, go sit across from somebody and just be like, you know, I messed up, you know, and I'm sorry. And what can I do to make it right? Like, can I give you money? Can I go mow your lawn? Can I show up and help you with something? Do you have something going on in your life that I can fix or be of service around? And the one thing you learn, there's kind of two things you learn when you do that process. The first thing was like, the first thing that I learned was nobody really gives a shit and you're not that important. And your problems in your head, you make them so much bigger than they really are in real life. I can't tell you the amount of people, man, that I sat across from and they're like, I love you, Andy. Like, it's okay, man. You know, and I thought they were going to disown me. I thought they were going to, I thought they would never talk to me again, you know? And the same thing is true in golf. Like, you're not that important, bro. Like, and nobody cares that you hit a bad shot and nobody cares that you shot 85. Like, yeah. It doesn't matter. Like, you play golf at a club. Like,
yeah.
You're a nobody. And I mean that respectfully. Like, I'm a nobody. Like, nobody cares. And having that perspective and being able to just ground yourself in the reality of just like, we're all just like little teeny dots, you know, on this ripping globe. And we're all really important to ourselves in our own head. But I guarantee you, like, Tony's thinking about his game, not my game. You know, you're thinking about your game, not my game, you know. And so I think maybe that's just one thing for everybody that plays the game. You know, you all know that guy that just takes it a little bit too seriously.
Of course.
He's got to tell you what he did wrong on every single shot.
Yeah.
Like, even when it's a good shot.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the wisdom, man, that I've gotten from just my journey. And, I mean, I think that's about it. Like, I don't know what else to share. But golf to me is a you know, it's a spiritual exercise, man. Like, it's not just a game. I mean that. And I meant that from the beginning. Like, golf is something that keeps me, engaged. It's a walking meditation, you know, it's an opportunity. And look, you guys have all played with me. Like, I play golf just like you guys. Like, I'm just a normal dude, you know, it's been a lot of work to get to the point where I can just be a normal dude. But the game has a different meaning for me, and I think it's a great game in that respect. You know, it's a great opportunity to practice some of these things. And this podcast in and of itself is a great reminder for me to ground myself back in the basics, you know.
Well, it's going to be a podcast that will be out there forever, really.
Until we delete it, man.
Well, you say that, but I mean, you know, somebody could record it. Like, once it's out on the internet, it's out on the internet. But it will be out there for people to listen to. I know I'll probably come back and listen to it. Like, you got really deep, man. And like Tony said, I commend you for talking about this stuff. It's really hard. Like, sometimes I don't know if I can talk about those types of things. Mm-hmm. I struggle sometimes talking about really, really tough stuff. So I appreciate you talking about it. I think we're probably going to have a lot of our listeners and people comment. I know you've always said, like, if anybody ever has anything they're dealing with, to reach out to Andy or any of us. I mean, we're always going to be here for, you know, our people and people that
100%
support us. So
100%.
Thank you very much for talking about it.
Andy.
Cool.
Yeah. We look forward to the next episode and
all right, guys.
Continue to have you on the journey with us.
God bless.
All right.
Godspeed.